to it.
Thank you very much. You've had some very interesting presentations today, and now for something completely different. I hope not. It is a bit different in that we've had some sort of broad overview of different areas, and this is just specifically looking at one project, but hopefully by way of example, that will illustrate the scope for this technology. Okay, which one of these I need to use? There we are. Given the confusion about EBLEX, BPEX and what we all are, I thought it was worth spending just a moment clarifying. So about 4 or 5 years ago, all of the statutory levy organisations for agriculture and horticulture in England, and many of my colleagues covered GB or even UK, came together under one banner, which was AHDB, a bit of a mouthful, the Agriculture and Horticulture Development Board. So I actually sit in EBLEX and look after the research for beef and lamb, but because of my background in the meat science area, I also cover off a bit of work for BPEX and pigs on the meat science, which is how I came to be involved in this particular project. And you can see there all my other colleagues working across dairy and the plant-based sectors as well. So that's who we are. So what I'm going to do, first of all, give you an overview as to the sort of potential for stable isotopes, talk about the pilot study that BPEX undertook, and then how we went about establishing a database and testing that database, and how that's evolved a little over time, and then address at the end some possible questions and hopefully wrap up in conclusion. So the origin of this, in about 2007-2008, we felt that the industry had a pretty good tracing system through assurance schemes, but that there was potential from some new analytical tools that were becoming available to make those more robust, perhaps to help people focus auditing a bit more in areas where there may be problems, and underpin those assurance schemes. So the stable isotope approach has been proven in various other sectors. The lab that we have been working with in Germany has used this in prosecutions, for example, where German asparagus has been substituted with Turkish asparagus. They've also used it looking at eggs and the substitution of organic eggs with non-organic eggs. So we felt that the technique had been proven in some sectors to have potential. But essentially, and this is a key point, and I'll probably say this several times, so you have to forgive me, the key point is all about the reference database. You have to have a strong and robust reference database against which you're comparing your samples. So essentially, we wanted to know if this could be applied to the tracing of British pork and pork products. Forgive me if I'm teaching Granny to suck eggs here, but it's worth just emphasising what stable isotopes are. We refer to heavy and light isotopes, and really it's all about the addition of one neutron in the nucleus. So carbon 13 or 13C has one more neutron than 12C, and that it does actually add weight to that atom, and that results in some different properties, not chemical properties, but different ways in which it is concentrated. I'll come back to that. So basically what we're looking at is these isotope ratios down the left. What I emphasise here for non-scientific audiences and people in the industry, we are talking about stable isotopes here. We're not talking about anything that has any radioactive decay. So these are all naturally present stable isotopes. We're not doing any labelling. It's just measuring what is there. So these are the isotopes that we're looking at. In fact, we don't use strontium, although in some cases it can add precision to the technique. So the things that we're looking at, hydrogen essentially... This is a key part of where we're getting the benefit from, the ability to distinguish between origins, is this fractionation. So, because deuterium, the hydrogen with the extra neutron, is heavier, it actually fractionates slightly differently. So it evaporates slightly more slowly when that hydrogen is in water. I should emphasise that water evaporates slightly more slowly, condenses slightly more quickly, and so it precipitates slightly more quickly. So what that means is that gives you an indication of geography in relation to how close the place that that water is deposited is from where that water was initially evaporated. Essentially, it's a proxy for how close you are to the sea. Carbon is fractionated depending on the photosynthetic pathway that the plant has used. So C4 plants like maize or sugarcane have a slightly higher concentration of the 13C than the C3 plants like grass and the main cereal crops. So that's diet, which can be part of a geographical proxy. Nitrogen, trophic level just refers to how far up the food chain you are. So you get different levels of accumulation in carnivores as you go up the food chain. There's also differences between marine and terrestrial plants. So again, it can indicate diet. Also, sort of non-biologically, if you like, the carbon ratio is different in manufactured fertilisers compared with the nitrogen which is accumulated in plants like clover, which are nitrogen fixers. And so that's one which is a key one, not relevant to this particular problem, but it's a key one for distinguishing between organic and non-organic foods. Oxygen, again, very similar to hydrogen, relates to evaporation, condensation. And sulfur, again, sulfur, because you get drift of sulfur from sea, again, it helps determine how close to the sea you are. So all these things create a picture. I've highlighted there in blue the things that are obviously relevant to water, and the things in green are the things that are more related to feed and geography. So basically that brings you up a picture. So when we look at the results, then what are we actually looking at? We're looking at the ratio of the heavy isotope to the light isotope. The heavy isotopes are in very small concentrations, so we're looking at a mil concentrations, and it's usually shown as a variance from a standard set by the Atomic Energy Authority. So, for example, I'm not going to go into the detail of them all, hydrogen and oxygen are usually expressed as a variance from standard mid-ocean water, so there is a standard which is set for that ratio, and you look at the variance from that ratio. Looking at it in that way, one helpful aspect of that is that it gives you numbers that you can actually sort of get your head around, because they're in sort of whole numbers. But it does mean that you can get negative numbers, because the ratio is lower than the standard. So if we look then in terms of our problem or our question, can this be used for verifying UK origin pork? Then obviously we're interested in how it can be used as geographic traces. So if you look across Europe, you can see these concentrations. So this is the difference in 18 oxygen as you go across Europe, and you can see there is a kind of gradation as you go from west to east. Those concentrations become closer to the standard. So the variation from standard is declining. So that's at a very kind of coarse level. If you come down to a UK level, then you can see, at the UK level, you can see, again, that variation goes across, or I should say British Isles, because we have Ireland in there as well. So that is one part of the signature that we're looking at, if you like, is the amount of water. So the hypothesis that essentially we're trying to test is, combining several of these elements, so the isotopes related to water, hydrogen and oxygen, and the other others that you would find in organic components, can they give a more accurate indication of origin than just looking at, for example, hydrogen on its own? And can we use some multivariate statistical techniques to actually generate a probability that this sample matches our database? So coming then to what BPEX actually did, we had the pilot study in 2008. We then, from that pilot study, which I'll show you in a moment, decided to continue with that and developed the reference database in 2009-10 when we went on to a field trial. At that point, and this is something I probably won't come back to, but we actually then looked specifically at how we could enhance and looking at isotopes in different tissues separately. So because, for example, tissue water turns over relatively rapidly, but the hydrogen and oxygen that has been built into the lipids within the body turns over slightly more slowly. So by looking at those separately, and putting them separately into your kind of signature, if you like, then that gives you more information than just lumping them all together. I've come back again to the database is key, so we've expanded and continue actually to expand the coverage of the database. We've looked at some specific studies on particular issues, curing and packing, which I think is relatively straightforward, sausages, which I'll show you, is a more complex area. And we're doing further field trials, and we're now really in implementation. So the pilot study really was really rather small. We took three reference fork samples from the UK, took a feed and a water sample, and we took 15 just test samples, just randomly from retail, really. The cautions around this pilot was the laboratory we were working with, AgroIsoLab's own reference set for the UK, for pork, was really rather small, so there wasn't much to compare it with. And we also, at that point, concluded that actually getting your samples selected by the processors probably didn't give us the control over what we were getting that we needed. Particularly, not that there was any deliberate mischief at this point, but just the kind of attention to detail in terms of contaminating the sample with processing water from the plant and so on, which then messed everything up. So the results of that pilot, which gave us enough encouragement at least to continue, 8 test samples were correctly identified, and even when we fed in duplicate samples from the same farm, they were able to match those and say they looked like they came from the same place. They correctly identified 2 samples as non-British and correctly questioned 3 samples as being probably not British. There was a mismatch with 2 of the 15 test samples. One was a bacon sample, which wasn't UK pork, but it had been processed in the UK, so that leaves the question over sort of processing ingredients. And there was a fresh Danish pork sample, which they misidentified as being from the UK. But I think all this comes back to the lessons learned. We needed a larger reference data set, and we needed much better control over the samples that were being taken to go into that reference data set. So the main research project then was really a comprehensive evaluation of this technique and establishing a robust database and then testing that database. So the current database, it's growing all the time, so it's hard to sort of say the project finished at a point in time and this was the size of the database. So at the moment we have around 400 locations covering England, Scotland and Ireland, EBLEX and BPEX only operating England. So our coverage in the devolved regions depends on cooperation of other people who are prepared to fund sampling in those regions. The pork industry in Wales is minuscule, and so the Welsh decided not to participate. So far we haven't had any Welsh samples come up in our random testing that has caused us a problem. We have about 80 known non-UK samples. Essentially the approach there is, if this sample that we take looks like it doesn't come from the UK, then we might be able to get an indication where it came from. But that 80 samples is nowhere near robust enough to say with any degree of confidence where that sample would have come from. This just shows where the samples are. For any of you who know the pig industry, then the North East and East Anglia are the main centres of the pig industry, a little bit round in the South West. So we've got very good coverage of the main areas of the pig industry. Obviously Wales isn't covered. The Scottish pig industry is mostly around that East Coast area, So we're reasonably happy with the coverage we've got. Obviously, the southeast and the far southwest isn't very well covered. And I'll come back to what we do if that presents us a problem towards the end. So none of the visual presentations of these multivariate statistical approaches really do them justice. This is a principal components analysis, so essentially, I'm not a statistician, so I can only describe this in ways I can understand. Principal components takes all the data you have and then kind of crunches it up together and spits out a smaller number of variables, which make the data easier to visualise. But the actual probabilities aren't determined through this. This is just a kind of help for us to visualise it. You probably can't read all of the little labels, but if I put some lines on there, these are all UK, this side of the line, except, and I can't see it myself now, there's one German sample just on the line there. On the right-hand side of the line, they're all basically non-UK, except for that one there, and then there are some just on the line, there's some quite close to the line all the way round. So that just emphasises we can get separation. Where things are very different, we get very strong separation. So Spain sits right out on the right there, and there are no Spanish samples anywhere near the rest of these. There's a couple of odd German samples that look a little bit like the Spanish ones, but they don't, you know, they sit very separately. Mainland Europe, all a bit muddled up together, so we wouldn't suggest that you could separate those very easily with this technique on its own. So once we've got the database and we've got our sample, then in this first field trial, what we did, we took, basically what we did here was to test the lab. So we took samples we knew from these postcodes, and we put them into the lab as unknown samples and asked them to test them against the database. And you can see in this case, they're all obviously UK origin, and they all come up with probabilities, the lowest there being 98.2% of being of the same origin as the database. And then we did a second field trial with three samples, and again, they were correctly identical. So these are the kind of outputs. This is the kind of really simple output that we get at the end, just says, what's the probability that this sample matches our database? But from these field trials, some issues did emerge. So I mentioned already that processed products with added water and curing agents can potentially be an issue. We also noticed that when we take samples from the retailers, when we take samples from an abattoir where we've identified the farm and we know where that pig's come from, we almost always get probabilities in the 98-99%. When we go to retail samples, they seem to drop to sort of top 80s, low 90s. So still not enough to really be concerned about, but why is there that shift? And we think probably there's something around the packaging gas. Most pork would be sold in a gas mixture, high oxygen CO2 gas mixture. So maybe maybe some of that CO2 is dissolved into the meat, it's highly soluble, maybe that's affecting the ratio. So we've had a little look at that. Sausages, particular issue I'll come back to again. Unusual feeds. So if you have a farm that's feeding something very unusual, some quite often liquid co-products, for example, because they don't travel well, those will only be used very locally to where they're being produced. So local to a particular local human food business, then the liquid co-products might be used in the pig industry local to that. And so in some cases, if they're not in the database and you pick a sample that has come from one of those farms, then it might look like an outlier. Similarly, organic, which I've already touched on, that can shift the ratio. I think I've probably already covered this, only that this now sort of summarises really what are the isotope ratios we're using. So there's the hydrogen ratio, and there's a hydrogen ratio in organic material, so that's in water and in organic material, the carbon ratio and the carbon ratio in liquid, and then the nitrogen and sulfur ratio, which is going to be obviously mostly from the protein. Sausages then. So in sausages we had real difficulty, even when we constructed sausages and we knew where the meat had come from. And I think this is probably one we haven't solved yet, and we're certainly not using it in this kind of product at the moment. And you can see, this is just taking the, I think it's carbon ratio, and looking at the different components of the sausage. So this is the whole sausage mix, and this is the pork trim, and at the bottom the pork belly trim. So the pork, both types of pork in that sausage are given pretty consistent ratios, but the sausage is really quite different from that. The other key ingredient that goes into sausage, or our kind of sausages at least, is cereals, and this pinhead rust has a very similar ratio to the mix. That is obviously shifting the ratio dramatically. So where you have a product that has another protein ingredient or another major carbohydrate ingredient, then that can mess up the ratio. So at the moment, when we talk about implementation, we're talking about whole muscle type products. So the practical application, I think I said this to a degree already, but this, we see this as a testing regime to support direct audit activity, not to stand on its own as a policing mechanism in itself. BPEX is currently funding 4 cycles of testing per year, and each of those cycles is 30 retail samples. If you, I was slightly nervous when I saw the nice chart one that you put up earlier today, which showed the number of tests you need to be competent to detect something if it's there. These levels of testing are really, you know, quite low. That probably wouldn't stand up to statistical scrutiny as a sample of the UK pork production. But it is across all retailers and across all the major supply chains. So it is, if you like, a deterrent, and it's, as I say, only to go alongside and perhaps direct the audit activity. And in addition to that, we continue to add samples to the database. So in practical terms, how does it work? So the pork that's purchased either is carrying the Red Tractor label or another label that indicates it's of UK origin. It's then tested against the database and you get a probability of the match. That result is then passed back to BMPA, who sort of own the standard for pork, and to Red Tractor as appropriate. They then ask the processor, if the result is anomalous, they ask the processor to do a backwards trace to the source farms, where you have very low probabilities. What we are planning to do is, once we get back to those source farms, we can then look at the database by postcode area, and if we have farms that are in those postcode areas, we can then look at a specific match against a subset of the database in case they're on the edge of the population, and that changes the probabilities. If we identify in that group of farms, because most times we're going to get back to say a half-day slaughter, so there'll be a number of farms in that batch, then what we'll do is, if there are farms in there which are unusual, so if, for example, a farm popped up that was in Kent and we didn't have anything in there in our database, then we would go and sample from that, hopefully from that specific farm, ideally, or from farms in that area, and then we can do a direct comparison. And if it's still way out, it still looks more like it's Danish or Dutch than it does the samples we've picked up, then, again, that would direct further audit activity. And to facilitate that, we're actually building up a library. The expensive part is not actually getting the samples. The expensive part is doing the isotope analysis. So we're building up a library of samples in the freezer. The thing about these isotopes that's nice is they are stable, so it doesn't really matter what happens to your sample. There can be a slight shift if you get fluid loss from the tissue into the interstitial space, on thawing, but if you freeze rapidly and hold with a low enough temperature, then that is minimal. So you can hold them almost indefinitely. So we can, hopefully we'll have a library of samples that we can do those backward tests really quite quickly. Any action then is for the assurance scheme to decide within the rules of that scheme. We're trying not to add cost to the industry on this, other than the industry is indirectly paying through the levy that they pay to BFEX for the testing. But we're not trying to add burden on the auditor. So what we're saying is that all of that is done sort of remote paper-based up until this point, and then at their next scheduled visit, then there is a specific audit of that paperwork that has been provided. So it's all sort of checked out then at that point. Does it work? This is a completely non-scientific answer now, but it certainly creates awareness and raises people's interest in what's going on. So these were taken from Meat Trade's Journal just at the end of last month. The BBC approached BPEX and asked if they could do a little programme on this, and they took three samples from a major retailer, and it's all in the press, so it doesn't matter if I say it happened to be from Tesco, but been from any of the others, I suspect. One of those samples, probably against all the odds actually, turned out to be outside the normal sort of probabilities you hope for, and it's created quite a lot of excitement. And in the meat trade press, at least, there's been a fairly public argument between the main supplier and a tertiary supplier about where the origin of that problem lies. So it certainly heightens people's attention to the issue. So in conclusion then, it can be used for origin verification of pork and processed products. We have a system in place for fresh pork through retailers. Limitations, I didn't really touch on Ireland. Of course, product from Northern Ireland can quite legitimately carry a UK label. Of course, Southern Ireland and Northern Ireland aren't that far away from each other. So that is a slightly more difficult one to disentangle. But the paper-based audit does help sort of verify whether it is likely that that product came from Ireland at all. The imports from Northern Ireland into mainland UK aren't that huge. So mostly Northern Irish pork would be sold locally. So it's probably not a huge issue in terms of operation of the scheme, but it does sort of highlight where you need to be aware of that when you're doing the testing. Sausages that have less than a 90% meat content are a problem, which would be most of our kind of sausages. An adjustment, which I didn't really talk on in any detail, but where we have curing or packing, because those are fairly standard shifts that you get with those things, you can make an adjustment for those when you're looking at the probabilities. There is a sort of overview of this on the BPEX website, which is available. Any of you can pick that up. I'm happy for you to email me with further questions. There's also a report on the website of the full, the main sort of research phase of the project, if you like. And we do hope and intend to publish that in the scientific literature at some point when we get round to it. Longhand Data came to us with the original concept, and they act as our main link with the lab in Germany, so I'd like to thank them. QMS in Scotland, Limia in Northern Ireland provided finance for sampling in those areas, and the abattoirs were there. Tremendous cooperation actually in letting us go in and take the samples more or less at our will. So, and thanks finally to you for listening.